This is The Takeout.
Ask not what your country can do for you.
With Major Garrett.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
At this defining moment, change has come to America.
And we will make America great again.
Welcome to the very best part of my broadcast week. I'm Major Garrett, Chief White House Correspondent of CBS News, joined as I am every week by the world's greatest podcast sidekick, Steve Shigaris, Political Director of CBS News. Hello and good morning to you, Steve.
Hello and good morning to you, Major.
It's good morning because it's breakfast time, and we are at Bistro B, one of our regular haunts for this Takeout podcast, and we are joined by not one, but two guests this morning. One who has been here before, as a matter of fact, was the most important guest we've ever had because he was the very first guest of this podcast. Corey Lewandowski, who for a very substantial period of time was the campaign manager for the 45th president of the United States, Donald Trump. Sitting next to him is a gentleman named Dave Bossi, who was the deputy campaign manager for the Trump campaign in the latter 3 months of the campaign. They have put together a book about that campaign effort. It is called Let Trump Be Trump. Dave Bossi, Corey Lewandowski, welcome to the Takeout Podcast microphones.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
Who isn't letting Trump be Trump?
No, Major, that's not what the title is. The title of the book is Let Trump Be Trump.
But who isn't?
No.
The implication is...
No.
There's something that blocks him or someone wants him not to be Trump.
No, look, here's why. Look, when Dave and I undertook this project to write the book, we wanted to give the American people the behind-the-scenes view of what we believe to be the greatest political story in our lifetimes, or maybe ever. And what we saw early on, because Dave, and we'll talk through it, introduced me to then Mr. Trump, was a man who has been successful in New York real estate, in books, in television. And when he got into the world of politics, I didn't think it was my job to try and change him, to make him something he didn't want to be. So the motto of the campaign when I was there was, let Trump be Trump, because he's been such a success. And now, as the president of the United States, I don't think anyone's trying to prevent him from doing that, but the success that he's achieved over 71 years is almost unparalleled in the history of our great country. And so letting him be himself is what has proven to be successful.
And Dave, the reason I ask that is because you know, are familiar with the Reagan era. There were times during President Reagan's presidency where his most ardent supporters would tell those who were, they believe, trying to restrain Ronald Reagan, let Reagan be Reagan.
There's no doubt about that. We heard that all throughout the Reagan two terms. But as you know, the book industry, Major, you know, this title was chosen before even General Kelly was there. It was in a completely different regime. So this title is not pointed towards anyone at the White House. It is Let Trump Be Trump is an overarching title that we believe that he is the best communicator, the best ever seen. And so he's able to, during the campaign, during the transition, now in the White House, just cut right through it. He goes above the mainstream media, straight to the American people. And that's one of the things that, you know, gets that straight talk, gets him, got him a lot of votes during last November's election.
More than enough.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you think he is being Trump now, and how is that working out for him? You could point to the election and say it was successful during the campaign, but I think a lot of people could point to polling and say it's not as successful. What is your take on that?
Look, I don't want to go down the road of polling because I think, you know, I've got my own opinions on that because I woke up on election day of last year when every single public poll said that Donald Trump was going to lose in the greatest historic loss since, you know, probably Walter Mondale. And the polls we've seen have been very, very wrong. And, you know, unfortunately, there's been no accountability in the polling industry. So they put out these polls that the American people say Trump is going to lose. He wins. And they say, whoops, anyways, doesn't count. So now, you know, they say, well, this president isn't polling well. Look at what he's accomplishing right now. He's in his first term, his first year of the first term. We will see the largest tax cut in American history be implemented under his first year. And that's very important. Does that mean it's enough? No. But if you look at what he's been able to do outside of just the legislative side, particularly on the regulatory side, which is removing regulations, growing the economy at 3.3, 3.4, 3.5%, $6 trillion of new market value in the economy right now, home ownership at the highest it's been in two generations, unemployment at the lowest it's been since the Nixon administration. He is succeeding through his sheer will and dragging people along to make that happen.
But there is a lot of polarization in this country right now politically, and a lot of people are pointing the finger at the president for being the cause of that.
Well, I would point the finger directly at Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. The two, you know, they're just obstructionists. These folks have no legislative agenda. They have no ideas to move America forward. All they can do is obstruct this president, try to obstruct this president every minute of every day. You know, during the last several cycles, the reason the Democrats have lost is because of their feckless, weak leadership. And I put that, and I thank them for continuing to make Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer their leaders. I continue to thank them for the retreads of these candidates that they put up, the Hillary Clintons. Now we're looking at Uncle Joe Biden making a comeback to run for president. We welcome that. They are devoid of any ideas. They are devoid of an agenda for the American people. That is the reason that Donald Trump got elected. He spoke truth to power. He took on Hillary Clinton. He broke the Clinton machine, and he came at it with ideas on immigration, on the economy, on a strong national on a stronger national security than Barack Obama, leading from the front and not behind. So, you know, I put the blame on the Democrats and their movement of really riots at the president's events, whether it's in Chicago during the campaign or putting people out on the streets. This is not helpful to the American people. It doesn't move America forward.
Let me talk a little bit about the book. Corey, there's a section, then you were the campaign manager early on, then the book writes about when Donald Trump said, "I don't consider John McCain a hero because heroes don't get captured." In the book, you say you thought, "Whoa, we're done." You imply that you thought, "Oh, this is going to end. We're finished." And then you say, "We need to have a press conference to fix this." Donald Trump has a press conference. He fixes it in his own way. Talk to us about that experience and what it told you about the different kind of candidate Donald Trump was.
You know, Major, as a what I consider to be a professional political operative, which because I have no other skills, so I've been involved in politics, is, you know, you make an assessment of a situation instantly, and as an operative, you're trying to figure out the best way to minimize or change the impact of maybe what someone
contain
just said,
damage.
Contain the damage, whatever you think, right? And so when candidate Trump made that statement, I said to him, and I outlined in the book, "Let Trump Be Trump, can I speak to you for a second, sir?" And we went into a room, and I said, "Sir, you know, by all accounts, John McCain was a war hero. He spent 5 years as a prisoner of war, and I need you to go and apologize for that. And I think we need to do a press conference." And he looked at me, and he kind of gave me that stare, which I now am very, very familiar with, and he says, "I think you're exactly right. Let's go do a press conference." And we walked downstairs in Iowa, and we held a 28-minute, potentially the most contentious press conference I'd ever seen in my life, and he doubled down. And he got into an exchange with a reporter back and forth, almost a shouting match. And I remember it so well. And then we had other events planned in Iowa that day, and we talked about it in the book, and I said, "Hey, fellas, let's go home." And we get on the airplane. It was very early on in the campaign. And I was on the back of the airplane. We were about to take off, leaving Iowa, and we were flying now back to New Jersey. I picked up the telephone. I called my wife and said, "Hey, baby, I'm coming home." And she said, "Why?" I said, "Campaign's over." And she said, "What do you mean? You just started." I said, "Yeah, well, I think it's over. I'll be home in about, you know, 6 hours." And, you know, we landed in New Jersey, and very quickly, I'll tell you, myself and Mr. Trump and Hope Hicks walked into his apartment
current
at Bedminster.
Current communications director at the White House.
The current communications director and, you know, what consists of the entire campaign at the time, me, Hope, and Mr. Trump. And he said, "You know what? John McCain hasn't done enough to help the veterans. And the VA in Phoenix, Arizona is a mess, and we need to fix it. And I'm going to fix it. And I need to make sure the veterans are taken care of." And within 24 hours, Cheryl Atkins had come out and said, "Donald Trump is exactly right. We need to do better for the veterans." And what I saw in that very unique time period, him doubling down, was by his sheer will and tenacity, he changed the dialogue, and it was something I'd never seen done before. And I said, if we make it through this, And Hope will tell you this. So we make it through this, he'll be the president of the United States.
Because other people at the time thought, his campaign is over. They
everybody,
were saying it.
Everybody. But people you know, the biggest names in the media, the biggest names in consulting, all call and say, you have to apologize, you have to apologize. And he said, no, I'm going to bring the veterans out to the forefront and fix this problem.
More on Donald Trump not apologizing when we come back. I'm Major Garrett. I'm with Dave Bossy and Corey Lewandowski, our guest, as always, with Steve Shigaris. You're listening to The Takeout.
At noon, on Monday, January 5th, 2015, Corey sat alone in the Starbucks in the atrium of Trump Tower, wearing his best suit, a crisply ironed shirt, and shoes he had shined the night before. He'd used hairspray that morning, which, when you consider he's from Lowell, is hilarious. The town Corey grew up in isn't a guys-use-hairspray kind of place, and besides, he didn't need it. Corey wears his hair the length of a drill sergeant's.
So, our guests, Corey Lewandowski and Dave Bossy, are hearing the audio version of their book for the very first time. They have never heard the audio version of this book, the book that they wrote. They're our guests here on The Takeout. I'm Major Garrett with Steve Shigaris. We're at Bistro B. So, gentlemen, what do you dig out? You're digging on that voice?
Wow. That's all I can say. I don't even know what that is.
It sounds like an announcer on a cereal commercial or something.
And Fruit Loops that morning from Mikey. I mean, it's amazing.
Oh, boy.
Well. Obviously, you were not consulted on the voice or the methodology. Were you asked to do the audio version?
We were, but it was a four-day commitment. And to be honest with you, neither of us had 4 days. And so they just said, we'll just get a professional voice to do it. And look at what that decision got
wow.
us.
Just to show you, Grandpa. Micromanage every decision, right?
Yeah, right. Oh, check boxes before they're approved. Yes.
Who made
right?
that decision?
Makes those words sound pretty good, though.
Corey, you're fired.
So how was the hairspray today, by the way?
Wonderful.
Excellent.
Thank
very
you. CNN
hairspray.
Did me up the right this morning. Thank
go.
You.
Oh, boy. That's right. Because oh, you're on the book tour, so you're going to every place you can. Why did you write this book in the third person?
Well,
I found it, I must tell you, slightly distracting.
Is that maybe, right?
Yeah, because I know you and I've hung around you, and you're not exactly third-person kind of people to me.
I think that's
sort of come
right.
at you like a freight train.
I have heard the opposite from a lot of folks. And here's what it was, Major. We initially wrote the book, one chapter in my voice, one chapter in Corey's voice, going back and forth. And we just hated it. We read the first version, and we just couldn't – it really just didn't work. And so we stylistically changed it to this disembodied third person. And we've gotten a lot of folks who,
have you ever
quite honestly,
have you ever met that disembodied third person?
Yes, as a matter of fact. And so, without Brian, we couldn't have been able to put this together the way it was. And we sat down and we just went through every day with our colleague.
Got it.
And he helped us really put this together. We like how it reads, and we've had a lot of folks, everyone except for you, Major, say that we love it.
Well, and Major, you know, the other thing too is
it's not a tell-all book. Let's let our audience know you settle one score. You settle a Paul Manafort account. It
well, that's
seems
an easy
to me.
One.
That was easy.
Okay.
But you don't settle any other accounts. There's not a great deal of like. There's no kiss and tell in this book about anything. It is a revelation about what you saw, what you thought was most important, what you think is historically most meaningful about the events of that campaign.
If in this book, what we did was try to give people the flavor of what it was like to be on the inside. So it's the minute-to-minute accounting of election night, what we went through as with the candidate and personally. It's a minute-by-minute account of Billy Bush weekend, of the debate preps and of the debates. So we try to give people that full flavor of the overall campaign from when the escalator ride down all the way through the inauguration.
The one other thing, Major, we tried not to do, and I know this sounds opposite of everything everyone knows about me and Dave, is we tried not to pretend that we were bigger in the book than we really were. We want to give the credit to the one man who this whole campaign was about, which is Donald Trump. And we did it through our eyes as a small role that we were privileged enough to have. But this campaign was 99.9% Donald Trump, 0.01% everybody else. And anybody who tells you otherwise is just a bold-faced liar.
So let me ask you this. Could Would Donald Trump be president without Corey Lewandowski?
Yes.
Would he be without David Bossie?
Without question.
Would he be without Ivanka Trump?
With that, look, Donald Trump, I think if he was a one-man band and walked out onto the stage by himself, would put 20,000 people in a room, he would hold a handheld microphone, and this guy could have been the president of the United States, you know, almost single-handedly. And the role that the staff played was truly designed to make sure that he had the resources necessary at the right place at the right time that he performed. We didn't go on the stage 6, 7, 8 times a day and give a message. We didn't tell him what to say. This campaign was one man who understood the American people and was willing to treat and talk to it.
We're going to get to some of the details in the book about the fuel for that process, bringing the president, now president, then candidate to the stage on a regular basis. But we need some fuel here at Bistro B. So let me start with, I'll have the Bistro B biscuit, please. Scrambled eggs. Thanks.
Eggs Florentine, please.
Florentine.
Yes.
Corey, what do you want?
I'll just take an egg white omelet with cheddar cheese and crisp bacon.
Wait, no egg yolks? Guy from
egg
Lowell?
Whites, egg whites.
Yeah, well, you got to get the yolks, man.
Yeah, I'll have the...
no kibitzing. Go ahead, Bossy.
A white and cheddar cheese?
Yeah, with that,
omelet, right?
Yeah, correct. Yeah. Thank you.
And I'm going to have the eggs, spinach, cheddar cheese, and sausage.
Sure.
Thank you. Spinach, no bread. Trump. No bread.
He's like Trump.
Spinach?
No, I don't eat green stuff. Come on.
That's an answer we can identify with, or certainly I can identify with. Shaggy, take us away.
Corey, I want to ask you about a not-so-great time during the campaign. Let's just play the, because I love the audiobook so much.
We do love
let's
the audio.
Let's play SOT number 6, please.
Number 6.
When Corey walked into his office, Don Jr. asked if they could talk privately. They walked the 15 steps down the hall to a conference room, in which sat Matt Calamari and Michael Cohen. With Matt and Michael sitting there, it should have been obvious to him what was about to happen. Still, when Don Jr. started reciting the exit lines, he was stunned. "Things aren't working out, Corey," he said. "There have been complaints from the staff, and you've become a distraction." Corey pushed back some and asked for specifics, which Don Jr. didn't offer. All the younger Trump said was that Corey was terminated effective immediately.
So that was June 20th, 2016, the day you were fired. In fact, I think if Don Jr. actually spoke that way, it might have probably hurt a little bit less. But I just
with that hushed whisper.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think it would have been easier if it had been a hushed whisper execution as opposed to the...
True.
I want to ask you, though.
Straight up execution.
Don Jr. is the one that fired you.
He did.
Not the candidate, not the current president of the United States.
True.
How did that make you feel? Also, what was publicly reported at the time was that the boss, as you called him, Donald Trump Sr., was the one that was in the room that fired you. So you were sort of setting the record straight by saying he wasn't there. Don Jr. was the one that fired me. What was that like, not having Don Sr. the one pointing the finger at you?
You know, I honestly, it was very difficult. Probably the toughest day of my professional life. I had given what was literally my heart and soul to the campaign, and worked 18 hours a day for 18 months and put everything else that was near and dear to my heart by the wayside to do something which I thought was very important, which is to help Donald Trump get elected president of the United States. And the day I was fired, I asked for the reasons why I was fired, because at that point we had won 38 primaries and caucuses. Donald Trump was on his way to becoming the Republican nominee, and I didn't get an answer, and that was tough.
Were you offended that the candidate didn't talk to you about this?
No, and I'll tell you why. My relationship with then-candidate Trump and now the president has always been one of complete mutual respect. And what I wanted for him and what I do want for him and always have is for him to be successful. And if he thought that the decision was I needed to go in order for him to achieve the success, which is winning the campaign, even though I disagreed with that and I think there could have been another way, I could have had a different role in the campaign. Look, there are a lot of the campaign who got to stick around for a long time, okay? I think of guys like Rick Gates who are still getting paid. You know, it's kind of ridiculous. And the guy who's running and winning the campaign at some level with the help of a very small group of staff was asked to leave. There could have been another way to do it, but I look back now, Shaggy, and you know what I see? Maybe it was the best thing that ever happened to me. And look, I'm not a religious guy. I'm not a religious guy, but I think God has always taken care of me. And I truly mean that. You know, I leave the campaign, and now I see all this talk of Russia and collusion and private meetings at the Trump Tower and these people talking to foreign governments, and I have nothing to do with that. No one cares because I wasn't there anymore, and I didn't know it on June 20th when I was fired. But now that I look back, My relationship with the president is very good. With the family is very strong. I have been a good, loyal soldier, and I always will because I want him to be successful. But maybe God had a special plan I didn't know, which was we're going to put you on CNN. You're going to fight for the president's agenda on television, and you won't be part of all of this chaos which has consumed the campaign after I left, which, look, hindsight's always 20/20, and it was a very, very hard day for me professionally.
That's a very good place for us to take a quick break. We'll come back with some of the chaos that you've talked about that did engulf the campaign and, to a certain extent, still engulfs this presidency. I'm Major Garrett with Steve Shigaris. You're listening to The Takeout. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Takeout Podcast. That's at Takeout Podcast.
You're listening to The Takeout.
And enjoying every moment of it, either on CBSN or in podcast land or on our great radio stations across the country. Thank you for joining us. I'm Major Garrett. That's my signature. These are our Takeout Podcast stickers, the one and only piece of swag this very humble audio odyssey has yet to offer. In 2018, we intend to have a larger swag collection, but still, we just have the stickers. But they're really nice, and they are popular. Are they not, Steve Shigaris?
Hugely popular.
How do the people get them? There's only,
one way. One way to do it.
One way. If you'd gentlemen, like, you know that. There's only one way.
I'm about to find
steal
out.
One? We could steal
you
it.
Can steal
it. There's one. Two ways, I think.
If you'd like your very own Takeout Podcast sticker signed by Major Garrett, send your request along with a self-addressed stamped envelope to Takeout Sticker, care of CBS News at 2020 M Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20036.
Yes, self-addressed stamped envelope. That's two stamps, gentlemen.
I don't
and
think I've heard
400
that.
People have done that.
I actually haven't heard that since, like, the 1980s.
Precisely. Yeah, well, that's, it's a very retro show.
Old school.
That's one
vintage.
Of the reasons you're here. So you just implied something, Corey, that we need to talk about, that there is this issue that you're glad you're not wrapped up in, but others are. Russia, meetings, things that were denied that are now having to be admitted to, at least in the sense that people talked. You write in the book that that is a ridiculous topic and has no basis in reality.
Let me just
yet you are somewhat, you just told us, you're glad you're not wrapped up in whatever this is.
Right. We've been asked, why isn't Russia a bigger part of the book? And it's really simple. There was nothing to do with Russia that either of us saw that would need to be in the book. There's no, I never saw a Russian. It is ridiculous. Well, yeah, except for him. And that's the only guy that we ever
say
saw.
Say it one more time, just so everyone hears
it. Well, they asked me if I've ever spoken to a Russian. I think it was just Chris Cuomo, so I'm not sure.
There we go.
He was the only one.
That's his best gag line, ladies and gentlemen. Continue, Dave Bossi.
No, but look, this is what it's about, okay? This is what it's about. Everyone says, well, Russia, 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 right? I sat next to candidate Trump for 18 hours a day, 7 days a week, for 18 months. The word Russia never came up. Collusion, cooperation, coordination never came up. But let me be clear, and this is very important. If anybody from the Trump campaign or anybody else in this country cooperated, colluded with, or coordinated with Russia to affect the outcome of the U.S. election system, they should go to jail for the rest of their lives. It's very important. Our election system and our democracy is too important. And if somebody tried to do something to allow a foreign entity, not just Russia or any foreign entity, to take control of our election system or to materially impact the outcome of that election, those people should go to jail for the rest of their lives because our democracy is too important to allow someone to do that.
So, you were with Trump until mid-June of 2016. Then there's the Paul Manafort, Rick Gates era. Then, Dave Bossi, when did you start as deputy campaign manager?
About a week
and someone
after.
With basically heavyweight operational control over the schedule, the meetings, and, right. and everything that was the front face of the campaign.
Yes.
And that was when?
Steve Bannon and Kellyanne Conway came in around the 18th to 20th of August, and I came in about a week later. So towards the end of
August. So there's this 8 or 9 week period.
10 weeks
it
about.
It was 8 weeks and one day, just to be clear, that Paul had confirmed.
But who's counting?
It took me a long time to get him fired.
Could anything nefarious have happened in that period of time?
Look, who knows? And I don't know the answer. But let me say, if that were to happen, and Paul Manafort did something that he was coordinating or cooperating or colluding with Russia or anybody else to do something that was illegal, I want the FBI to investigate it, to prosecute that person, and to hold them accountable forever.
And let me just say this. This investigation's been going on for 18 months. This is not a new thing. If there was a scintilla of evidence, the way this place has been leaking, whether it's the House or Senate or DOJ, we would know that there was evidence of collusion, of cooperation between the Russians or anyone, you know, representing Russians and the campaign. It did not happen, and there's been no evidence that it happened. And that's a troubling thing to continue to hear. Well, what if? It's 18 months, and this place is leaked like a sieve. Everything's on the front page the next day.
And for our audience, it's important to point out, I think, that they should know, Dave, you have some experience being an investigator. You have some experience working
for... I thought you were going to say a leaker.
I wouldn't suggest that. But you were a congressional investigator for the early part of your political career.
That's
you
right.
have some familiarity with not only the investigatory process, but the media methodology around an investigation.
There's no question about that. And that's why I say as a certainty, having been the chief investigator for Congress, the main investigative body of Congress. The House Oversight Committee in the 90s when it was Bill Clinton we were investigating.
And Dan Burton was the chairman.
Yeah, absolutely. And I worked on the Senate side for Alphonse D'Amato's Whitewater Committee. I worked on the House side. And we covered all of the investigations from Whitewater through impeachment. It was, if there was something that came out that we learned, it became public information very quickly. That's the job of Congress. It's the oversight aspect. And so I don't begrudge the leaks to a degree, but I say that if there was some collusion, if there were facts, if there was evidence, it would be known to the American people.
Because that's what you did when you had them.
This investigation, right? That's right. This investigation, whether it was through hearings or whatever else, what other means we had, we would put it out. And so there's just nothing there. And so that's why you've seen the Papadopouloses of the world get stuck with lying about something, not collusion, but lying to the FBI. Mike Flynn, the same thing. Had nothing to do with collusion, had nothing to do with it, but it was about lying to the FBI about something.
Why would they lie, though?
We have nothing.
We don't know. And look, and Paul and Rick Gates...
I think that's a fair question. Why would they do that?
Why didn't Paul and Rick Gates disclose their offshore bank accounts and pay taxes? Who knows? I mean, look, what they have been charged with in the criminal complaints, the 10 or 12 count indictment, is something that they did or were reported to have done 10 years ago. And now that they were a very brief period of time, you know, on the campaign, this is the story. And George Papadopoulos and Mike Flynn lied to the FBI, probably like Hillary Clinton and Huma Abedin and Cheryl Mills, except there's two sets of rules. There's one for the pristine elites and the liberals because there's a bias there, and there's one for the guys like Mike Flynn, who's a good, honorable man who served his country well.
Can I just ask a couple of questions about Manafort, and then we'll get to Flynn in a second? Manafort, the warning signs were there. Okay, this is a guy who basically almost helped derail John McCain's campaign manager in 2008 because of his connections to Ukraine and Russia. Couldn't somebody have Googled Paul Manafort and said this might not be a good idea, Mr. Trump, to hire this guy?
To bring him in?
Why did that not happen? Was that a judgment problem on the candidate's part?
No, let me tell you why Paul came on board. It's very important to know. Look, the last time there was a Republican contested convention was 1976 when Paul was about 60. Okay, now fast forward, you take him out of mothballs.
He looks pretty good though.
Well, Botox does that.
The hair
Botox
and skin.
Look, he's not going to hold up so well under the lights. Okay, but let me tell you something. We had nobody, and nobody who was still alive had ever been part of a contested convention from 1976, and we were in the middle of a delegate fight.
Okay, but
he
became the campaign manager.
No, he became the campaign chairman. So just to be clear, there were two campaign managers, me and the great Kellyanne
Conway.
But after
you left, he was running the campaign.
He was the campaign
chairman.
Was
that a judgment call that was not a good judgment call on Trump's part?
Look, when I left the campaign, they were heading into the Republican convention, and Paul's job was to go and make sure that the delegates at that convention were buttoned up and locked in to make Trump the Republican nominee. He actually had a comparative advantage to do that because he understood the arcane process because he's 100
years old.
And
would you say, as a matter of fact, he did do that?
No,
he accomplished that.
Look, Trump was going to be the nominee, but the system is so difficult to understand that he did have success at the convention. But as soon as the convention was over, almost immediately, Paul was moved out, they realized the campaign had gone into free fall. We write about it and let Trump be Trump. Mm-hmm. We went from a primary juggernaut to a general election disaster, down 16 before Bannon and Kellyanne and Dave Bossie came in.
It helped that there were stories coming out about Paul Manafort and
his truth comes out sometimes.
Right? So I guess my question is, how did you not know that those kinds of stories were going to come out? Because, again, Paul Manafort's history was not secret.
No, it wasn't secret. But look, you have to remember, we had such a small team. We didn't have the ability to go and spend a lot of time on people who understood the arcane system of the process of getting delegates. And
so you were desperate for a delegate
counter. Ted Cruz at the time had a great guy. Ken Cuccinelli knows this system. He's an absolute killer. I would have loved to have got him. Great. We didn't, and we ended up with Manafort, and hence it didn't last too long.
But Dave,
hold that thought. Dave, hold that thought. We got our food's here. We're so happy to have it. We're going to take a quick break. Dave wants to jump in, and he will jump in, as he always does, when we come back.
You're listening to The Takeout.
I'm Major Garrett with Steve Shigaris. Breakfast has arrived. You can possibly tell that as you listen to me speak, because, mid-bite of my delicious breakfast here at Bistro B. Yes, thank you very much, Arden Fari. That's the proper sound effect. Dave Bossie, you were going to jump in and make a point about this last topic we were talking about. Why was Manafort brought in? Why was that a good decision? Was that an error in judgment? Should it be regretted in retrospect?
Look, we didn't have anything to do with Paul Manafort. Nobody called me and said, what about Paul Manafort? I think that there were folks who were trying to move Corey out that were interested in a solution to the delegate problem, and Paul Manafort was a decent choice for an operative. The problem is when people don't do the background research, you get mistakes like that. And when you're in a fast-paced campaign, that's when those things happen easily.
Let's talk about the two sides of Donald Trump.
Go ahead. Just one quick question. Either of you guys been interviewed by the special counsel or the congressional investigators?
Nope.
Are you expecting to be?
Nope.
I relish the opportunity to go and tell the truth, and I'll be happy to do that. And I have gone, and this has been very public. I went and spoke to the Senate committee and said I'll be happy to come back anytime. I haven't talked to anybody else. But I'll be happy to go tell anybody anything because that's what I do. I tell the truth.
So let's talk about the two sides of Donald Trump that you bring up in this book. One is the side that I don't think is commonly associated with him. Generous, forgiving, magnanimous, appreciative, and a leader who brings people behind him. That last part people appreciate. And yet you also write, Corey, I think in a way that even surprised me, about how he can be at times callous and unforgiving and very unsympathetic. And you'd write about the Wisconsin primary and how sick you were at the time because you had literally worked yourself practically into a hospital bed because of the associated stress, the time, and the physicality of a presidential campaign. I've covered five. I know a bit about what that's like. And what you get from, as you call him, Mr. Trump or the boss, is, Corey, if you can't handle it, we'll find someone else. As I read that, I thought to myself, that's about the most heartless thing I've ever read about in any political campaign. Explain to me these two different people.
Well, you know, Major, when you sit next to someone for a long time, you really get to know a person. And it was an amazing privilege to be next to him. And he forced me to be the very best that I could be. But I failed him. I failed him on numerous occasions. I didn't deliver 50 primary wins. We delivered 38. Was the expectation too high? I don't know, but that's what he expects, demands, and deserves. He deserves perfection.
Failing
and so,
pile of garbage.
Look, when the microphone doesn't work at a venue and he has to say, hey, George, don't pay for the mic, that's not a failure of Donald Trump. That's a failure of the staff, and that should never have occurred. And I literally had pneumonia, I was but, I mean, that's emaciated.
Human
I was
imperfection,
sick.
Which is part of life, can't
but,
exist.
But it doesn't mean you shouldn't be the best and work to be the best every day. And I fell asleep for about 15 minutes on the plane. I had pneumonia. I hadn't slept. I was just emaciated. I'd been down probably 30 pounds. You know, the stress of a presidential campaign, let alone one that was such a campaign that was so focused on doing events and being on the go. He just looked, and I had fallen asleep for 15 minutes on the plane. He looked back and said, "Corey, if you can't take it, we'll get somebody else." And I said, "Boy, that's tough." And you know what? I understood it because I want the best, and I push my staff to be the best because of what he taught me. He expects it, but he deserves it.
Why does he deserve it?
Why does he deserve it?
He deserves it because he asked me to come on board and help him do what many believe to be an impossible task. And unless we were perfect, we weren't going to be successful. And so I demanded from my staff that if we have a meeting at 8 o'clock, you don't show up at 8:01, you show up at 7:50. That's a respect. Every single thing that I ask my staff to do, I expect it to be perfect. No spelling mistakes. Talking points are accurate, buttoned up, and proper. He expects that. He deserves it. He's the boss. We owe him the very best. And when I failed, he told me.
My meeting Donald Trump, to begin with, I was a friend of famous Las Vegas casino magnate Steve Wynn. A good friend of mine. Steve Wynn was helping me raise money for Children's Hospital here in Washington, D.C., where one of my children, my son, who was a baby, had four brain surgeries for a brain aneurysm and had two heart surgeries. And so I wanted to be able to give back and help other children who didn't have the means to be able to have the best health care possible. And Steve Wynn said, "You know what? I'm going to introduce you to my friend Donald Trump." This is in 2010. And so I go to Trump Tower and I meet Mr. Trump, and I don't know what to expect. And he was the warmest, most generous guy, except for when I asked for his golf course, when he said he gave me everything I wanted. I think I had seven things on my list, and I articulated it in the book. But it is that when I asked for the free golf course for the day, he gave me the first time I ever experienced the Trump gaze, look. That Trump look. And I said to myself,
it's not really a gaze.
No.
It's not a gaze.
I can't do it. Maybe Corey can, but it is.
Give it a try, Corey.
It's tough.
I would never replicate it.
Right. And
it
you don't know.
Right you.
I didn't know if I just had stepped on myself, right? I said, "Oh, I'm in trouble here." And then he just turns it on you. And he didn't give me the golf course, but he was so generous. He wrote a personal check to Children's Hospital. No press, no fanfare. He did it, and we became friends from that.
And yet, as you say in the book, he did rip your face off more
than
once.
Well, he did, but that's the same thing that Corey says. You know, we expected perfection from ourselves and our staff. And in the heat of battle, which is what a campaign is, it's a very tough thing, and he would move it aside immediately. As soon as it happened, he would move it aside. He never held a grudge, and he treated you like family. But when you got it, you got it, and it's okay. So, look, Mr. Trump is a warm, generous guy, and that's what we try to articulate in the book as well, which is the part that most Americans don't get from the media coverage of him.
You know, Major, I spent 73 days away from home during the campaign, just on the road, Mar-a-Lago campaign. You did it a lot, too. He would almost every day, "Corey, how's the family? Should I call your wife? Do you want me to call the kids and tell them the great work you're doing? You know, you're doing something so important." There's a story in the book on Let Trump Be Trump where our advance guy, George Gigikos, his two daughters are having a dance recital, and he can't go because he's on the campaign trail. And he says, "Mr. Trump, can you record a message for my daughters?" And he gets out the video phone, the iPhone, and he says, "You know, I really need your daddy right now. He's helping me run for President of the United States, girls. I'm so proud of him. I'm sorry he can't be with you." That is the man that the media doesn't report, that he's so concerned about everybody else. And once you're on the team, whether you've been there a day, a week, or 100 years, you are on the team all in.
That's the voice of Corey Lewandowski, for a very long time the campaign manager for Donald Trump. Dave Bossie, the other voice you heard, deputy campaign manager in the home stretch of the campaign. They have written a book called Let Trump Be Trump. It is a very popular book, not quite yet a bestseller, but sold out on Amazon. That's a good sign, gentlemen.
It's only been out 3 days, so we're excited to have it out in the marketplace.
And we thank you for being here. I'm Major Garrett with Steve Shigaris. You've been listening to The Takeout.
For more from this week's conversation, download the Takeout Outtake Especial Tuesday morning, wherever you listen to your podcasts. The Takeout is produced by Arden Fari and Katiana Krachenko. CBSN production by Alex Zuckerman and Eric Susanen. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Takeout Podcast. That's at Takeout Podcast. And for more, visit takeoutpodcast.com. The Takeout is a production of CBS News Radio.
We have to get past our taxes. I call it the mixer. It's in conference right now, but I call it the mixer. I think when it comes out, it's going to be a beautiful mix.